For September the 19th, 2023, we talk about Baldur's Gate 3, Pathologic 2, Swarm, and much more. Welcome to Level 473. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're rocking three style tonight because I didn't realize until very late that Ben was not going to be on. So, he's out of town and didn't feel right to ask Jala like a little bit before, hey, can you hop on? So
5 minutes warning is plenty to invest 3 hours.
She doesn't have anything else
playing. And yeah.
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 So, but three style is a-okay. Dennis, what's been going on?
Not much. So my wife, Jen, right now is, on a mission trip in Africa for 9 days. She's over there. And so I am single dadding it back on the home front. That has defined, my last couple of days. Nothing too crazy. 'Cause you know, the older kids are in school right now.
Yeah.
But we've definitely done our fair share of eating out and doing the boys stuff of like arcades, etc. So it's been a good time.
Yeah. How many days in a row can a small child have breakfast for dinner?
we're trying to find out. Hey, I felt good. I made tortellini and broccoli and sauce. The other night I was kicking ass dinner wise.
Yeah.
Now they were interested in eating, very little of that. Oh, I had sweet potatoes too. Did sweet potatoes. So they went for the tortellini.
What's important is that it was there is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's important is I can shame them for not eating it to leave scars that will last a lifetime and impact their relationship with food.
Give them just a horrible complex. I think that is the way to go, if I'm being honest with you. If you don't mind saying, what part of Africa?
She's going to South Africa.
Okay.
The church we go to started a relationship with a bunch of people down there during the AIDS epidemic, and it's just kind of continued. So she's doing painting container schools. So have you seen like the shipping container homes or shipping container apartments where people like do that to set something up in a hard to reach place or just for minimalism or what have you? Well, they basically are doing that, but with a classroom.
Nice.
So that, you know, all these areas that wouldn't otherwise have educational facilities can have that. So,
yeah.
Putting those in and then painting them and packing meals so the kids that come can have food provided is kind of the gist of it. Mm-hmm. But she's also, you know, she got to go, I forget which mountain, she got to climb a mountain already. South Africa is like wine country, so she got to visit a winery.
Mm.
And she's having some fun too.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And we're eating like schlubs and playing way too many video games, so everyone is having fun.
That meal that you laid out does not sound very schlubby to me, unless it was in a bag that you boiled.
No bags were involved.
What's that, sous vide or something?
Sous vide. Yeah. Put it in a bag and boiling it is actually hot couture.
Yeah. Okay. I've tried sous vide. I've always overdone it. It's been hard, and I don't know. I usually have better luck just raw dogging it. Shouldn't have said it that way. Back up. Yeah.
If you're not going like, man, I'm really not satisfied with my steak, you know, sous vide isn't going to magically change anything for you.
True. And I don't know how sous vide works with cooking stuff on a grill. And I just got a new grill a couple of months ago. And so I've not wanted to back away from using that. And plus, I don't know.
It's kind of the opposite, right? Like,
yeah.
What if we did it as non-directly heated as possible?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. David, how about you? What's up?
Not a whole lot. Going to New Orleans with the family at the end of the week. So nice. Just kind of getting ready for that.
Cool. You got any plans for stuff you want to go see?
We're going to do a food tour. We're going to do the airboat thing.
Nice.
You know, just kind of the basics. I don't think anything weird. There is one thing I want to do. There's apparently one of the hotels near French Quarter, their bar is like carousel themed and actually like revolves.
Oh.
So, yeah, that sounds kind of interesting.
You know what I like to add to my delirience? Rotational motion.
I mean,
always works out real well.
Oh, gosh. Well, that sounds cool. I would like to go to New Orleans at some point.
It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Gary went and went alone a few years ago and did like a Gabriel Knight tour, going to locations from that game because the first one takes place in New Orleans.
And was this self-directed or is that actually a cottage industry? Because that would be amazing.
It was self-directed. Like he looked through the game and because like a lot of the locations are like accurate to some place or another. Like there's a prominent voodoo shop that you go to. The coolest thing that it sounds like you did was like went to this big cemetery and got a tour and basically learned all about how differently bodies have to be interred New Orleans just feels very different from a lot of the places that I have been because it is that it has a history involved in a bunch of different cultures. Nice. I don't have an awful lot. Like, I hate to be talks about the weather guy, but it's been gorgeous out, so I've been doing more like outside kind of stuff. Got back over and did the waterfall hike that I like doing over at David, you'll know, Pleasant Hill, the Lions Falls. That was good. I got that done in a faster time than I've done before, which I know that's not the point. The point is to enjoy it. But when I went out there earlier in the year, it kicked my ass. And this time it didn't. So I must be making some kind of progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be able to hike anymore without just feeling like I'm playing Firewatch.
Yeah.
I really need to try that. I've heard good things.
Same, but with Death Stranding.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Yeah. Which is a very good simulation of hiking. like I don't do the load balancing thing. I don't ruck. A la Jala or whatever, but like wayfinding and making sure you stay upright is definitely a thing, especially if you are getting any kind of elevation gain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I guarantee you, if Jala could push a button to make sure her ruck was set up perfectly, she would.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what I've got. Nothing too crazy except enjoying some outdoor physical activity while I can, and that is still a novelty to me. So I don't see any reason why we should put off talking about games any longer. I think that would be a way to go, don't you think?
Oh, I've got one retraction I'll throw up real quick.
Okay.
It occurred to me the second I said it, I'm like, I'll say something. When I say doing boy things, I don't mean like going to an arcade is related to boys. Mm-hmm. It is the children in our family who happen to be boys enjoy going to the arcade. So
yeah.
Clarifying that.
Okay. That is appreciated. But also if you got annoyed about that, I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we should talk about games, and to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Let's see. I mean, I think we got a lead with Baldur's Gate on this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to talk about anything else.
You got another big one on here that I'm curious to hear about, but I would like to hear you talk about this. I have started this, but I only had time to do like the barest of the intro. I got to the part where the ship crashed. So still very early. That's in the first hour.
Well, it depending on how long you spend at character creation, right?
Okay,
because
okay.
You could easily blow, 2.5 hours just fiddling with character stuff.
I kind of knew what kind of character I wanted to make when I went into it. But I don't have an awful lot to say about it other than, boy, this feels like Larian's take on D&D, specifically Faerun, Forgotten Realms D&D. So sign me up.
Wait, isn't that literally what it is?
Yeah, that's
that's what they set out to do, and they did it.
Yes. Yeah. So Dennis, I want to hear what you've gotten up to. What are your what is different this time?
Yeah. Oh man. I talked about it last week, and just how accommodating the game is of your choices. I think the main thing that stuck out to me in this past week of playing is just how badly the game will draw you into just one more syndrome.
Oh yeah.
And specifically not even for any good reason, just specifically the inclination I have to try to squeeze in as much adventure as possible between long rests.
Mm-hmm.
As possible. It is a problem.
Oh, you're not playing Warlock.
Yeah. I don't know how to deal with it. But man, we covered last time we talked about it, that long rests are not hard to come by.
No,
you're going to find plenty of provisions. You're not going to miss any story. And in fact, sometimes it's better that you do frequent long rests because that allows them to dole out big story beats, closer to when the triggering things happen. So characters will at certain points say like, you know what, when we settle down for the night, I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
And that's your kind of cue that, oh, there's a big story beat coming up. But the way I play, it's like, great. Well, then 3 sessions later, when we all have 1 HP and I've spent all my spell slots, we're all dripping with blood, then I'll try to remember what you said you wanted to talk to me about.
Is there a downside to long resting?
Absolutely none.
I mean, especially
none that I can tell.
So why are you why are you riding the tires so thin?
I think to explain that I should explain something else about me, and I'll let you guys make the connection. When I text and I'm typing a word, and I realize that I've spelled something wrong or misplaced a letter, or even if I just decide I want to change the word I'm using. Dumb example. Let's say I wrote good and I was like, you know, I actually wanted to use great. I will strategically go back and not delete the G because I want to get the most use possible out of the letters I already typed.
Well, that's maniac behavior.
Yeah, I was gonna say, have you considered being screened for obsessive compulsive disorder?
Oh, it gets worse. I'm trying to think of a specific example.
That definitely sounds like stuff I do.
Because like I will also let's say I'm blanking on words that would work for this. But like I will like delete out one letter between 2 letters that I want to keep and then type the rest. It is that compulsion applied to Baldur's Gate 3 where it's like I have spell slots left. I see a thing over there. If I go to the camp, I'm going to have to watch a loading screen before I can see what's next. And it's not a long loading screen, right? But there's just this feeling of I could squeeze in a little more. I'm curious what's around that corner. By way of example, like, you know, I've fought my way through this swamp. I'm kind of on my last legs, but I see the witch's house that I've been looking for in front of me. And I'm like, you know, okay, I'll just scout out around it. So when I rest, I'll know what to prepare. Like I want to know what my approach is. But then I realize, oh, actually there's a ledge up there that if I have my barbarian throw my gnome.
You get, oh, while I'm here.
Yeah. And then I peek my head inside and be like, oh yeah, I can see the witch. She's looking the other way. I just want to see inside. Again, I'm preparing. And then I pass an insight check to be like, oh, secret passageway. Well, you know, I'm already sneaking. I'm already here. I've earned this. I need to go down the secret passageway. There's a whole bunch of social encounters down at the bottom of this passageway, leads to another secret area, which leads to a fight, which leads to another secret area, which leads to a boss fight. And it's like, and then I came into this trying to rest and I've done 6 more things just because they chained together so naturally.
This is such a strange combination of following a compulsion to maximize a resource that doesn't exist.
Yes.
While still not being able to stop yourself from following an impulse that works
while
counter.
Wasting a resource that does exist, by which we mean time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
I've got to say, I'm really disappointed. Penny Arcade used to sell shirts that said, "Why not a long rest?" but apparently I can't find them anymore.
Oh, sad. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. And like, I'm getting gratification out of it. I don't get to that final moment of long resting and be like, "Ah, man, you know, I should have done more," or whatever. Like,
okay,
generally I'm getting joy out of this, but it is like, I've gotten myself into such crazy situations, and had to use tactics that I wouldn't if I just had my spells topped off.
Okay.
Which, you know, that is interesting in and of itself, but oftentimes it's like, well, you know, maybe having a sorcerer that can cast a spell is a good idea.
I mean, playing versus your character to their potential, especially when you don't know precisely what you're going up against, if you're going to need all of that.
Yeah, then I wouldn't get deep into the mechanics of throwing potions to make them explode on the ground. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know. Or you could just do what everyone should do and just roll Warlock.
is that the OP class for Baldur's Gate?
That is the OP class for if you're not doing a long rest. That is like the primary defining trait of the Warlock is it gets almost everything back on a short rest.
Mm.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, the short rests are available. It's just like a button to regain half your hit points in some of your spells for certain characters. So, you know, that can keep you going even further as well.
Yeah.
But you know, all that's amusing, but I think it is a testament to just how engrossing this game is. Like, Larian has filled the world with interesting stuff, chained together that just makes me so excited to explore. I don't even want to rest. Like, I'm like a kid before Christmas morning, not able to fall asleep. only the present under a tree is a rock troll that wants to kill me, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good on you, Larian.
So when you talk about like, okay, it forces you to improvise around mechanics that you otherwise would not engage with, I think that tracks to me, and also, and also lines up with at least an observation that I had, which is the action panel that you have is ridiculous for how granular it lets you get.
Yes.
Not in a, I mean, it's what, like, I don't know, two by six or whatever for just the basic actions you can do, which is plenty. You memorize the icons and you know what they do, but like just, like accounting for like weird little gimmicky things that you know, might want to do, like throwing a teammate or like dipping your weapon into a surface in order to get its effect. Just a bunch of little stuff like that, or even, you know, because this is 5e, their attacks of opportunity, you know, working in using your action for disengaging before you move, or getting in a pommel strike to stun people. Like, just the amount of, you know, additional things you can do besides melee attack, use a skill or use a spell is impressive. And it, you know, goes even further into this being immersive simi. Actually modeling the space and the objects in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, stuff also gets even wilder when you start really utilizing the potential of potions and scrolls.
Yeah.
Because now anyone can have any spell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some more restrictive stuff in D&D, or, you know, at least the variants of it that I've listened to around, like, okay, well, if you want to use this scroll, it's got to be on your spell list and you got to pass a use magic device check and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And at least so far in Baldur's Gate, it's just like, no, if they have the thing, they can do the thing. And so now all of a sudden, you know, take the granularity that you're talking about, and, you know, now suddenly, just based on how you set up your inventory, make it so anyone can do anything. And it's just, yeah, it's mind boggling. Which, you know, it does lead to sometimes I'll do something that it was like, well, that was completely ineffectual, or like, I burnt a level 2 spell slot on summoning this spiritual weapon, and then realized that I actually only want to do non-lethal damage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I won't use this spiritual weapon.
That's what saves coming is for.
Yes. And I've definitely done some of that. It's been fairly limited to when the game does something I didn't expect. Not in a gotcha way, but in the like, okay, if I had actually been talking to a GM at the table, they would have said, okay, so what you're about to do means this will happen. I would go, oh, of course, then I wouldn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I had this amazing climactic moment where I somehow managed to get a solo character engaged with a boss. The rest of the party was somewhere else. And then managed to use a spell to knock that boss over a cliff and down into the abyss.
Mm-hmm.
So one by myself. The boss at the start of the combat had set the cage for this captive I was trying to rescue on fire.
Mm.
And so it was this amazing, like, oh my God, I can't believe I just won. And then I didn't realize that in the time after the combat ended, you know, it was still counting away on the cage, and then the cage fell apart and the person I was trying to save fell down into the abyss. And it was like, okay, if I had just known to pause time there, obviously, like, I was even thinking about how I was going to stop the burning, get this person down.
Yeah.
So that, you know, save scummed around that. If I can call it a complaint, the only place where that happens rather frequently is around what will and won't break stealth.
Oh yeah, no.
So you know, when you, and I'm still not entirely clear. Like, if you jump while you're traversing, it doesn't necessarily break stealth, unless maybe if you jump while hidden from someone's eyesight, which, or, you know, in someone's line of sight, which I guess kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing else that I can think of in the game that, like, exits and automatically re-enters you in stealth like that. So
stealth has never been very well done in CRPGs.
Yeah.
I'm willing to hear exceptions, but I have never been satisfied with the way it's put together.
Mm-hmm. They do a nice job of, if one of your characters gets caught, but the others have still passed their stealth checks,
mm-hmm.
The character that's caught will get put into initiative order, but everyone else can still move around, quote unquote, in real time.
Oh, okay.
It's bad in that you can forget that you can just swap over to someone that didn't get caught to try to, like, continue to position.
Right.
And I fought one or two rounds outnumbered and in a bad position before I realized, like, wait a second, I have two other people that didn't get caught that I can totally, like, sneak up on these guys with.
They can get the jump. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It also does, apply suspension of disbelief a little bit, because, you know, one of your party members got caught and is in combat, and everyone that's in that combat is frozen in place while the rest of your party just kind of walks around and does whatever they want.
Mm.
So in a weird way, if you really want to not deal with, like, patrolling enemies, go in and start combat with one character.
Okay.
Swap back over to all the other three. And then, as far as I can tell, you just have now free reign, and they're going to stop moving around.
Yeah. You just keep them locked. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that lines up a little bit with creating a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, except, you know, that distraction would eventually get attacked by the people that saw it,
right.
Not giving you unlimited time to just move around.
Right. Yeah,
and
depends, you know, on how distracting it is.
This is true. This is true. There might be some stuff going on behind the scenes in terms of, you know, in terms of like the length of status effects and everything. I do notice it counting rounds outside the world.
Mm-hmm.
Or outside of combat. So I think there is something going on that's keeping track of rounds in time, even if you're not actively in combat. It just, yeah, it's very not well defined, and that really does impact you when you're stealthing.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, like, the stories and the writing have been so much fun. The tactical layer of the game has been so much fun. And like you've described a couple times, the simminess of it all,
mm-hmm.
Has been incredibly fun. So,
nice.
Yeah, this game is awesome.
Yeah, I'm super impressed so far, even with just the because obviously I've just gotten a taste, but man, what an opening.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that opening cinematic is something else.
Yeah,
they don't make them like that anymore.
I don't know, there's something about the way that it's especially not just cinematic but filmic. I don't know, it's just real good. Yeah. I don't know that I have anything else to say about Baldur's Gate 3 or questions to ask, because it would get into spoiler stuff. So
yeah. Money Smith, are you playing it? I forget now.
No, I'm waiting for it to come to Game Pass.
Aha.
Gotcha.
I don't think that's actually going to happen, but
yeah, Xbox shat the bed pretty bad, ignoring it. Yeah. So I think
what's
scrambling
the story
to get
with
it back?
That? Like, I've heard that, but I don't know, like, how in what sense did they ignore it?
I guess just did not fight to not have it PS5 exclusive.
Oh, I didn't realize it was PS5 exclusive.
Well, PC and PS5, yes.
Right. Well, yeah.
And I think, you know, Microsoft is getting a piece of that, regardless from PC stuff, but
no.
Yeah,
I don't have I don't know the particulars of it. I just know that there was something to do with the Xbox, specifically related to it can run on Xbox Series X very well, but part of Microsoft certification or something has to do with needing to run on both the Series X and the Series S.
Oh, that's right.
That caused a huge delay on the Xbox version.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that has any impact on it. Going to Game Pass or not, it could just come to PC Game Pass. I don't see a reason why it especially would or wouldn't, but I could also see Larian not wanting to make a deal if they were going to enforce that arbitrary thing, given the fact that 15 people bought an Xbox Series S and 10 people bought an Xbox Series X. So we're not dealing with huge margins here.
Yeah, so actually, now that you mentioned it, I actually read a thing on this. Apparently, they have since relented and said that they are allowed to not have split screen on co-op on whatever the weaker system is, whereas initially they weren't going to allow that. So my understanding is that's the thing.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, I have nothing more about Baldur's Gate. What's the other thing you got, Dennis?
Yeah, so I actually came back to a game because of the Steam Deck.
Oh, yeah. This is a good one on Steam Deck, too.
Yes. Picked Disco Elysium back up, and specifically picked it up because I was trying to think of games that would be good for the deck, and this fit the bill nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It has been real fun coming back to it. Especially because I am coming back to it in the most in character way possible,
which is not remembering a whole lot.
Not remembering. I think I had, like, I have a map of the first area in my head, and I kind of knew my way around that, and I knew I was investigating that, and then I think I might have changed locations. Well, I had to have because I don't recognize where I am.
Okay.
And I can't really remember why, or maybe I just wandered further in one direction than I had before.
That initial screen with the traffic jam is very large. Where is the location that you're at?
I dropped into the pawn shop, and I saw the lock that's like stuck open by the billboard that fell down.
Yeah, that is at the far south end of the main screen where the traffic jam is.
Aha. Okay. Yes. So I had not, I do not remember how I got down there, and you could have told me, like, oh yeah, that's you have to teleport there through a quest that you must not have remembered. And I would have believed you because I had no recollection of this area.
Yeah.
But it's really funny, you know, playing a character and having the dialogue options for just like, I'm sorry, I really have kind of forgotten what's going on. I'm completely winging it right now.
I'm going to need you to explain it to me in Pigs and Bunnies.
Yes. It's like, no, this hits home in a way that it hasn't before. In some ways, like I tap on Kim's shoulder and ask him to brief me again on the case as a refresher. He sighs and does so very kindly.
God, Kim's the best.
he politely finds something very interesting on the other side of the shop when he hears that I'm asking the pawn shop broker for hard drugs.
Uh-huh.
and all these things. I don't remember why, but the electrochemistry in my head says that drugs sound good, and that's as good to go on as anything else that I remember about the game.
Electrochemistry made a salient point, and Volition was nowhere to be found.
So yeah, it's like a whole new level of role playing for it. And I'm starting to get my bearings a little bit, just remembering like macro level what's going on, but all these micro level conversations are just super displaced from anything I recognize, and I'm finding that wildly enjoyable. Specifically because I think a funny connection point to Baldur's Gate, Disco Elysium is so structured around failure.
Yes.
Around doing or saying the wrong thing or completely misreading the situation or having the right read but completely failing your skill check. And Baldur's Gate 3 does much the same thing, where it's not you fucked up so you get the worst version. It is, okay, now a different interesting thing happens. And man, I'm really appreciating that. Excuse me, in these two games.
Yeah, they're both like having excellent DMs at two very different kinds of tabletop games.
Yes, yes. which obviously Baldur's Gate 3 would be D&D. I'd have to say, if I had to compare Disco Elysium, it would be like a We Are John kind of deal or something like that.
Is that another Herman's Head kind of thing where it's multiple personality things?
Yeah, acting like players controlling one person, all with different agendas.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. So that is Disco Elysium. I didn't make a ton of progress, but it just kind of marinated in the atmosphere for a while.
And what an atmosphere it is. Have there been any like NPCs or interactions that have stood out to you?
So you come across two old guys playing with their bowls. And you misread it as shot put and chuck one of them into the river.
They're doing like a shuffleboard thing, right?
Yeah, I still don't understand the game they were playing.
Yeah.
But they were very angry when I did not play it the correct way.
Well, yeah.
understandably. And then one of them just goes on this diatribe about the war that happened and kind of the history, except he's on the side of like, I'm happy with what the invaders did. I wish though we had done it to ourselves, but like it's this whole tangled web of perspective that you kind of, he leads you through.
Yeah.
But the great thing is when I was in the pawn shop, they have little figurines, like action figures from the war. And it talks about these, you know, the one regiment that like is, it's dressed a certain way. And you kind of realize over the course of this conversation that this guy is wearing that garb. And I stopped playing after the conversation. I had to go do something, but I was like, you know what? I kind of want to go back and buy a figurine and give it to that guy now. I don't know if he can, but that's what it made me want to do.
I mean, probably. I mean, it definitely updates with, I believe that updates the interaction at the very least. You can ask him about it, about the conflict between the communists and the moralists. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where am I having the fun in this game? What is amusing? Truly, the fun I'm having in this game is learning about the complicated history of this fictitious conflict. And it's like, oh, I didn't realize there was a faction of people that felt that way. That's so interesting. And I see now how that led to the tension in this area. And I'm basically doing a history lesson for fun of something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, you are getting the proper stuff out of it if you are enjoying it at that level. I think that is a huge. I mean, obviously, the people are more important than the ideology and than the ideologies in it. But seeing the marks that those ideologies have left on the material conditions of everybody around you is a huge part of what that game is supposed to be about.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. And runs great on the Steam Deck, and I think that the nature of that gameplay is paced so that it's great for a mobile platform. Yeah.
And it's not just like the ideology, like, so I'm reading the novel, gosh, there's a novel written by Robert Kurvitz, the director of Disco Elysium, called Terrible and Sacred Air. It came out in 2011. And though it came out 8 years before Disco Elysium was released, the novel takes place chronologically after Disco Elysium. Unrelated, like, you know, the Isola of Revachol is mentioned, you know, like the place where Disco Elysium is, but it just is related to different people in a different place, but it's still in the same world and concerns itself very much with the political conflicts and things happening elsewhere, but also with just what is the nature of the world that this is and how is it different to our own, even while having these factions and places that are very similar, similar to it. It's structured around like a missing persons case. It is still a little bit like investigatory. Yeah, it's not officially out. There was a, for lack of a better word, a fan translation that was made of it. That's what I'm reading. I believe that has been pulled down from Reddit. There is no official translation. So go and search for that at your own risk. As facts about the way this world is put together come out, if you continue playing this, I think that'll be very satisfying to pay attention to as well for you. Because they were absolutely for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is me this week.
Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of Baldur's Gate, as I said. I have been streaming Pathologic 2, a game which I have only made a few runs at before, which is wild given how much I love the original Pathologic. For people who are unaware, Pathologic 2 is kind of a retelling of what happened in Pathologic 1, but also it's a sequel, but also, yeah, it's a weird property like that. Has kind of more modern mechanics and stuff to go along with it, more modern presentation, but is still, you know, fundamentally about the same thing, which is you're in a small town on the Russian steppe, and you are there. In this case, you are playing from the perspective of somebody who is returning to his home in response to a letter that his dad sent him. His dad was the only doctor in the town, but he arrives home to find his dad having been murdered. He is considered to be guilty of the crime. He is wanted for the first day. But the murder mystery gives way to the kind of spread of this new epidemic that makes conditions very bad. And you and two of these other characters, which in the original were playable, in this one will be playable in DLC. But right now there's only one of the storylines. These three different healers working together to figure out what this epidemic is and try and find a way to stop it from burning through the population. That's kind of the setup. Functionally, this also is still about rooting through garbage and finding things to give to children in exchange for bullets and hard drugs in order to game an increasingly hostile economy to satisfy your needs that are increasingly harder to satisfy, your hunger, your immunity to the disease, your equipment. It is like trying to walk a mile with the same, let's say, like two cups of water in your cupped hands, and just that slowly draining out as you go.
Who is the Gollum looking dude from the cover art?
Let me see here. Pathologic 2. That is one of the Russian steppe crew. Russian has nothing to do with Russia. It just happens to take place in Russia. That's one of the like the steppe people, the people from the from the steppe outside. They're called the Odong. They're used as workers. They're sometimes referred to as walking worms. Some of them can talk, some of them can't. It is just part of the general magical realism of this.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. That's Interesting.
Yeah. It's a very slow burn. I mean, I'm streaming it. This is this past weekend was the hey Greta. Sorry, I got distracted by my cat. This past weekend was the third and fourth session. I just got to day 3 of 12, and that is when the epidemic really starts hitting, and certain districts start being shut down. Different districts are shut down every day. And when I say shut down, I mean the literal air is clouded with disease and the soot of this. The buildings are overtaken by scabs. Literal clouds of this disease are like patrolling up and down the streets, and looters and rioters are out and stopping you and attacking you, trying to stop the spread of it. Yeah, it is really bleak. Which is what you're there for. I'm not positive that I'm going to finish it on this. I think that I have made some fundamental mistakes that make it so that this stream is probably not going to be a complete one. I imagine I'm going to have worked my way into a corner, but that's just kind of something that you have to accept with it.
Do you mean that you won't be able to get a quote unquote good ending, or just that you've kind of locked yourself out of stuff that will stop you from progressing, period?
Just lock yourself into a situation with no food, no ability to heal yourself, and no money to get the things that you would need to get those.
Got it. So you're kind of in a death spiral right now.
I'm at what feels like the very tippy top of a death spiral.
That seems nice. Very topical. Yeah. Very.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a hard game to play and think about for a couple of years there. One thing that is cool that I think is going to be specific to this character, given his particular set of skills, is a new mechanic that is added in the sequel, which is diagnosis. So previously, like if an NPC got sick, it was always identifiably with this plague, which was called the sand pest, is what it was called. There were particular items that you could give in order to help them. And it was just one thing. And this one, it is not always clear what exactly they have. And there's a little mini game where you have to have taken your resources and made different colors of tincture to give to them to figure out what symptoms they have. But as you give them tinctures, it raises their pain, which makes it more difficult to actually get a good read on what the symptoms are. So you have to administer painkillers on it as well. And then the symptoms that you get determine what kind of antibiotic you end up giving. And this is a real nice bit of consonance because it takes stuff that otherwise would be junk, would have been in the previous game, junk resources or stuff that you would have to end up having to sell, or it'd be like low level healing items, and makes all of it precious, down to like to make the tinctures, you need water, and you can get water anywhere, but you need to have the bottle. But also that water A could be used to quench your thirst, which gives you more stamina, or you could trade it to drunks for things that they have. Again, in order to give it to small children, so they will give you drugs or bullets. yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, you're really doing a service by, taking those away from the kids.
Yes. I mean, if I can give a kid a fish hook or a safety pin in exchange for their morphine, well, I know better how to use that morphine, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't like to presume, but I believe that I do. So there are an awful lot of like little resource loops where everything is precious in multiple different ways, which makes the decision of how to allocate them much more interesting, but also makes it a much more difficult game in turn. Yeah. And
which that scarcity and difficulty is part of the fun in this genre.
Yes. Yeah. This kind of survival emphasis on survival, survival horror. And so, good.
So to that, Wikipedia describes this as a horror game, but everything I've heard of it, it sounds much more like a mystery, that sort of thing. Like, are there segments that are just like Resident Evil style run away from the zombies?
There are points where you are trapped in spaces with things that will attack and infect you, mm-hmm. as it goes. I would say this is, you know, because a huge part of the project of doing the streams and, you know, talking about horror games in general is kind of disentangling the different ways that something is scary, the different sure. ways that something qualifies as horror. This is much more in the atmospheric side of things.
Sure.
You know, and the atmosphere is bar none. Like, all you have to do is like look at some videos of this and being played. You know, with the music and just the aesthetics, the alienness of this town, the bizarre way that people talk. Yeah, this is more on the atmosphere side, but there are those moments where things get very tense, and this is in addition to the ridiculous stress of, again, always having that water drain out of your cupped hands. Yeah. And the writing is fantastic too. I mean, it is, you know, like Disco Elysium. You know, the first one I have very frequently likened, put those two in the same bucket because they are novelistic. This one has a little bit less text than the original one does, just because of the way it handles dialogue and the way that it handles its translation. But that doesn't mean it isn't playing with incredibly good characterization and very heady themes that are not very common in video games.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's probably a game I'm going to have to put down for a while after I fail and then make another run at it using the knowledge that I got from this one, which makes it like the survival game that it is, but also unlike survival horror games in general.
Sure.
Yeah. Any questions about Pathologic 2?
Mm-mm.
Cool. The last game that I played is a game called Swarm. This is a VR game. I'm playing it on the Quest 2 or whatever. This is recommended to me just in the app that gave me a 20% off coupon or whatever. And I was like, I'll go shopping. Let's see what is recommended to me based on liking Pistol Whip. It recommended this. I am on the bubble for whether or not I'm going to try and return it. Only for motion sickness reasons, not because I think it is a bad or unfun game. So what this is, the story is like a real dumb comic book kind of setup. There are these swarms of like alien drones that are invading the world, and you are this cocky hero who is the only person who can stop them. The agency that you're with gives you these two pistols, these two guns that will fire, but also have grappling hooks on them. The way that this is pitched in the Quest store is Spider-Man plus guns. And this is a wave-based arena shooter where you are flying over the sea, grappling between these grappling points in this kind of circular arena, shooting these swarms of drones that move around Galaga like while also trying to destroy like the special ones that stick around to try and attack you, keeping yourself in the air by grappling on to particular points. Because you have two grappling hooks, you can kind of like steer and affect your trajectory. And you are attempting to, you know, make it so you're in the right spot, either as you are swinging, you know, to shoot at what you want to aim at, or send yourself high up enough in the air that you get a good vantage point that you can fire with both pistols at things while you are falling, and then catch yourself and then swing back up at the last moment. Can you understand why this would make me motion sick?
Yeah, I'm watching a little, video of it right now. Holy crap.
I knew it was a risk. I wanted to see if I could stand by my grappling hooks, make anything fun. And when this is singing, it really does sing. Because
it's also a rhythm game.
No, it is not, unfortunately. But it'd be cool if that was an element. I never turn my nose up at a rhythm game. Like when it sings, it really does. Like the swinging does feel very good. The fact that you have two of them, like, you know, just literally, okay, I'm partway through this swing and I need to like pull my way around to the left. So I'm going to grapple on something to the left and then it will like alter my trajectory as I go. The problem is your physical body doesn't match what your eyes are doing or what you, or you know, what is there. Also, the grappling lines are bouncy and this doesn't stand to reason, because if they're stretchy or bouncy, then this shouldn't work. But like a way that you can also alter the trajectory of the way that you are going is you do like a little yank on them to like pull yourself up short. And that is different that if you are doing just one grapple or two at a time, right? So it, like it is really modeling your trajectory in a way that is like what feels accurate, but is also incredibly fun, and it sets up very cool moments where you get it just right and you have as much opportunity to like shoot every drone in a line before they get to the exit portal and escape, right? Again, mm-hmm. The problem is in the game you are doing all this crazy stuff and you as a person are standing in the middle of your living room like a dope hoping nobody's looking in.
Yeah,
this almost sounds like was it Luftrausser or whatever.
The game by the ridiculous fishing people.
Yeah, where you've got like the it's a side-scrolling bullet hell shooter, but the whole mechanic is your ship is rocket powered, and so you can like shoot up and then spin in midair to like fire backwards while you're still moving forward and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actually is a pretty good description. I've never played Luftrausser, but that lines up.
Oh, you should check it out. I think you might like it. Yeah. I mean, it's not a very extensive game, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
How strong is the auto aim on this, or how forgiving is the targeting? Because I mean, it looks like you are just whipping around wildly.
Oh, you are going so fast.
Yeah. So it's got to be pretty friendly, right?
You have to be like, I found myself having to aim quite a bit. Like I felt like I had to be actually pretty precise. A lot of this is aided by the fact that you have time slowdown a little bit.
Okay. That cures what ails you.
Yeah. That is limited though. It is restored as you grapple. So like as you do more intricate grappling stuff, that meter fills back up. So you want to save it for, moments where it really matters that you get the aim right, but it is there. It is present.
Cool.
Yeah. So probably going to return it if that mechanism is available, just because I found myself unable to play it for more than 15 minutes at a time. That said, it is a game that is meant to be played in short bursts. Like it is purely just an arcade action game. It's not Half-Life Alyx where it's expecting you to deal with flying around it. I think the in-game speedometer having it like 60 kilometers per hour or something like that.
Jeez.
Or 60 meters per hour. Sorry. But yeah, it's a lot.
Interesting.
And if I can't return it, whatever, I'm out $20, but
yeah. I this is a demo of what VR can do that no other game can do well.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we see refined versions of this and more of this kind of thing in the future.
Yep. I've played a few like first person grapple games, just in the search for finding one that really, really works. I've not found one, that works either in, just regular 2D, not 2D, but regular mm-hmm. display, and or VR, but, hope springs eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Hey, so like I mentioned, I've mostly been just getting ready for traveling, but I have been continuing to play Starfield.
Cool.
I think we kind of went over the a lot of it last time, so just gonna kind of hit some interesting bullet points. Something I found interesting about this thing that I didn't realize going forward or going into it is, although this is a setting where space travel is fairly common, and routine and, that sort of thing, it's actually not a setting where humanity has spread particularly far, throughout space. Based on like one of the backstory elements is there's two main kind of nation states or whatever, that the two opposing factions, and one of the backstory elements is they have a treaty that neither of them will colonize more than three systems. So, you know, unlike something like, I don't know, Elite or whatever, where, you know, humanity's just spread throughout the Milky Way, there's actually a, you know, each of the factions has about one or two, like, kind of, you know, large scale cities, and then, you know, a couple of, like, industrial cities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of interesting to me. I've joined the two factions, which for the one nation is kind of a... It's really weird because it's a matchup of, on the one hand, they're kind of the idealistic, like, space exploration, science-oriented faction, but they're also kind of the Starship Troopers faction.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
where, like, yeah. You know, no one gets citizenship by default. You have to join the military or do some sort of non-military service in order to become a citizen.
Okay.
They're also... It's kind of ambiguous. They're potentially at least a little bit totalitarian. On the other hand, the other faction is basically space cowboys, which is kind of unfortunate because on the one hand, like, you know, I've seen, you know, Firefly and stuff like that. Like, you know, space cowboys is a really cool premise. The problem is that they're kind of set up in opposition to the other more established faction as the, like, oh, we're the faction that's all about, like, self-reliance and, you know, independence and don't tread on me. It's like, oh, so you're space Republicans.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, so it basically it is just Firefly, like the, you know, the... whatever, what is it, Browncoats, the non-Empire people, like they had like the bit of like Confederacy to them, you know, something like that. So, you know, it's like, oh yeah, like we don't compel you into service, but also, you know, just maybe there would be some instances where some law would be good, actually.
Right. And yeah, it's funny because when you join their faction, the what you join is the Rangers, the and which are, you know, basically like, you know, you're the sheriff, you know, kind of that sort of thing, which is kind of funny because it's like, this is the you know, self-reliance and we don't need no government thing, but then the most natural way to interact with the faction is to become an agent of the government and go around helping people.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of funny. So yeah, I will say, I think I, you know, some of the kind of space Republican thing is definitely intentional. Like the game point blank, you know, comments on the fact that their society has like no social safety net, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of it is just a unfortunate side effect of our current world. So, yeah. Like the head of the Rangers, there's really not any indication that like he's not a good person, but has like a thick Kentucky accent, and I cannot hear him as Mitch McConnell.
Oh, it's really, yeah, no, just a problem of coding. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, you know, that's, but, you know, it is interesting. It's cool that you get, you know, cowboy themed weapons and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the kind of funny thing is that They're actually, that government is really kind of a allied of a couple of, groups that were opposed to the kind of empire or whatever. And the other main group is basically the cyberpunk, kind of faction.
Okay.
Their main city and kind of the name of the faction is just Neon, which is super, super on the nose.
Yeah, a little bit.
The writing team ran out of time. They're just like, fuck it, Neon.
Nobody accused Bethesda themselves of having an awful lot of imagination. That's why they had to borrow all of the imagination of Fallout.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's weird, I guess. So much of this game just seems like taking kind of the elemental units of like what are the different things that make up space fantasy and then have a thing that represents them.
Yeah.
But I will say it is kind of cool that the playing through their faction missions is very kind of, detective, ranger, going around interrogating people, kind of negotiating hostage situations, dealing with the, underworld cyber runners, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. Join the other faction, you basically become, they have kind of a militia, sort of independent wing of the Empire's military that you can join to get citizenship.
Oh, and, so like a fascist paramilitary street gang?
I think I'm a little bit, overselling how much, kind of the fascist angle. Like, that mm-hmm. is definitely a thing that exists. It's more, I would say it's much more in terms of, like, this is a society with a lot of propaganda and, fairly law and order orientation, as mm-hmm. opposed to actually being, like, like totalitarian, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. I mean, a lot of that, I think, is also the fact that, like I said, elemental, space stuff, this is kind of the faction for if you're into, like, very military oriented takes on space sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's partially just they need an excuse to have you be in the military, but it wouldn't be a fun game if you were, like, actually just following orders as a grunt the whole time.
Yeah.
That's been kind of cool. In terms of the, actual play, the two things I've noticed. One, I don't know if this is controversial or obvious or whatever, but having chance-based persuasion mechanics just isn't a good way to do persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it basically gets down to, like, you just save scum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really think that, Deus Ex, Human Revolution, and what was the Rockstar cop game?
L.A. Noir?
Yeah. I think that really is the right way to go in terms of, like, make the persuasion and deduction stuff actually be a game mechanic instead of just a stat check.
Mm-hmm.
Although something I do like is that the way it works is you get various arguments you can make, and they're each worth a certain number of points, and the worth, the more points they are, the harder they are to be successful. But, and you have a certain number of rounds of the debate effectively to get to get the required number of points.
Do you get more arguments available if you have done more footwork leading up to it? Like if you've discovered something about, you know, what they want or what's really going on, or is it just a matter of you roll in and you have to make the right choices?
Yeah. From what I've seen, there isn't actually, it's straight up a percent chance. So like the things you're saying are just abstractions. You know, there's no actual like, oh, this particular argument would be, you know, more appropriate for this character's personality.
That's sad.
Which sucks. The one thing I do like, though, is for each of the arguments, the person you're going against has distinct voice lines for if they either accept or don't accept the argument. Which is cool. The other thing I've noticed that's, I guess, interesting is overall, I don't think the writing is, you know, fairly good, pretty decent, pretty good stories, you know, good dialogue, interesting characters, that sort of thing. But I don't know quite how to describe it, but the consistency and tone is often very, very off. So like the romantic, you know, potential romantic partner that is kind of the roguish guy, his sort of quest and kind of, you know, the, you know how a Bethesda game is, like, as periodically as you get enough affinity with the character, they say like, oh, I need to talk to you, and then you know,
yeah
have the thing. All revolves around his husband who died under mysterious circumstances, like and he basically finding out that, you know, things, you know, the circumstances he died under may be more questionable and investigating it. But the problem is, like, that's actually, you know, really interesting, really well written. It's kind of a nice add some dimensionality to the fact that other than that, he's kind of the jokey Han Solo type of character. But the problem is that because that's the romantic stuff, it then gets into like halfway through this conversation about like figuring out what happened to your dead husband, I'm then going to like awkwardly flirt with you and offer you like a sensual massage.
Oh no.
Ah, geez. There's probably more important things to worry about right now.
Right. Exactly. And like, likewise with that, I feel like a lot of times the choices for responses just seem slightly off, where it'll be a situation where it's like, you know, I want to do maybe the, like, you know, kind of cautiously, you know, not either like pro whatever you just said or anti whatever you just said. But the only option to do that is basically like being a smartass. And again, that doesn't work when the conversation is about like, hey, here's this like horrible thing that happened to me.
Well, it's marvelized.
Right. Exactly. So, so that's kind of interesting. I will say on the more positive side, I do like that it seems like what the characters like and dislike in terms of your responses seems a little bit more interesting than normal. So like with this character, he's generally one of the, you know, good aligned heroic characters, but at the same time as kind of the rogue, he's also cool with you kind of doing a snarky response or that sort of thing if it's witty enough.
Okay. So audacity in actually being a good joke.
Right, exactly. And likewise, I like that, and this is hard to explain, but it seems like if you look at like New Vegas, you know, I think New Vegas is kind of the gold standard for games like this.
Yes.
But one of the things is a lot of the companions very explicitly had, like, you know, this is the character that's like, you know, pro Caesar's Legion, or the character that's definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this time around, you're much more seeing like they don't care what faction you join. It's more they're seeing the way that character kind of interacts with that faction, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Which, you know, which I think's interesting. So again, with the character, you know, the companion I've been having, if you go with kind of the more, the Imperial, faction, you know, he's doing a lot of kind of, you know, bucking the system, and, you know, you get a lot of his asides, so like you'll go through some propaganda and then he'll pull you aside and be like, all right, here's what actually happened. Whereas, when you're more with the Space Republicans, you know, it's a lot more him sort of, you know, speaking truth to power, you know, that sort of thing.
Right, right.
So, yeah, so that's, you know, there, it's one of those things. There's definitely good things in this game. It definitely has some, you know, some interesting flaws.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So, that's really as far as I've gone so far.
What kind of character are you playing, like, mechanically? Like, is there a particular, I guess, like, I don't know how, like, the class system or the skill system in this works.
Yeah, so the way it works is actually kind of interesting, because you choose a skill and then, have to complete challenges. So like, you know, lockpick this many locks, shoot down this many ships, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And those unlock the ability to spend further skill points in the skill.
Okay.
That being said, I haven't found skills to actually be that important. So I pretty much just keep my skill points around until I need them to spend, you know, spend on something to actually unlock the ability to do something.
Okay.
So far I have a bunch of points in lock picking, and then most of the rest of my a good number in persuasion, and then most of the rest of my points are in basically like the crafting abilities, especially because a lot of the crafting, particularly with ships, is not just like you can make this, but like you can actually, you can't use it if you don't have this skill.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, okay. So that's what I've been doing. I've mostly been using revolvers.
So you're not using the far future space Colt M1911?
No, I'm not.
Okay. It's just, it's very funny that there is just straight up a 1911.
So that one's actually interesting, because the at least the one I have, one of the perks, if you go with the starting faction of having parents, your father is a history professor, so it's explicitly a like 50-year-old gun he restored and gave to you.
Oh, okay.
So I think there also are just straight up, like, for some reason, this is a 1911. Mm-hmm. But
well,
like,
it's the, you know, if we don't give it to you this way, we're going to give it to you that way. And yeah, in some ways are cooler than right. Others.
But mm-hmm. Like, yeah, so the one I'm carrying is explicitly like the gun owned by the guy that founded like the faction that's kind of like the followers of the apocalypse.
Okay, like the mutual aid folks.
Yep. Yeah. So yes, but that being said, yeah, there is weird stuff. I mean, lots of space knives and swords and things. Yeah.
Nice.
That's all I've got. Honestly, there's a fairly good chance once I get back, I'm just going to jump to like Lies of P or you know, one of these other games. But yeah. You know.
hey, take it as it comes.
Yep.
Nice. That sounds like a segment to me.
Indeed it does.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to know about a relic of a bygone era, rented games. Yeah. So did you ever rent games growing up? And what was your most memorable experience with a rented game?
Yeah, and I will get us started here with Callum, who says, we really should have had people list their ages if they were comfortable, because I want to see what the young... Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you were growing up, or just when that was a thing.
Yes, yeah. Or if it was a thing. Like, I don't know, if somebody is 20... Well, if somebody was 20 now, they probably would have been like a little kid when like the last of the Hollywood videos dried up or the last of the blockbusters dropped up. So that it's possible, mm-hmm. but like kind of hanging on by a thread there. Also, I don't think our audience is that young.
Man,
good.
I am surprised that one of the video game manufacturers has not tried to make video game rental be a thing.
Oh yeah. Just trying something, anything to keep physical media in, or,
oh, I'm saying no physical media, just like, oh yeah, you can, you know, spend $2 to get this game for a week from the app store.
I think Gamefly does digital rentals, and what you're describing is Apple Arcade.
I mean, that's just a monthly subscription to have access to a game to a
rental service.
Is it a specific game?
It is a catalog.
Yeah, okay. It's a catalog of stuff, and stuff can leave it, but I've never had that happen to me. Yeah. Regardless, we have Callum, who says, first time I played Final Fantasy VII, a friend had rented the PlayStation and game, but not a memory card. We had neglected Barrett for some reason, then got to the section in the Golden Saucer where he has his solo boss fight. Game over, no saves. The rest of the weekend was spent playing Tekken. Yeah, that's a problem.
That'll get you.
Yeah, no, when you end up below the Golden Saucer there fighting Dine, it's rough. Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, my mom managed a video store from 1985 to 1994, so I handpicked out the NES games for the store when they decided to rent NES games in 1988, and could get games for a week or so when they were new before they went to the store. Hmm. If a game was in, mom could bring it home for me if I asked. I also did rent games from another rental place for games not at my mom's store for a week for about $6.
Man, week-long rentals at that time as well. That was usually like video games had to be back like 2 days, like the next day or so. Yeah. At least places I went, like because David and I grew up in the same place, I almost got extremely hyper local. But like that video rental place over on West 4th in the city center there, or the Kmart,
the Kmart's where I went.
Yes, yeah, the Kmart, that one had like a 3-day rental, I think.
Okay, that must have been it.
I remember it being a big deal when Blockbuster got 7-day rentals around the time that the N64 came out, but even that was only on particular things. Yeah. Fuck, I'm old. Jesus. hey Dennis, what's Ollie say?
Ollie has probably my favorite one of all time. Ollie says, I rented Anna Kournikova Smash Court Tennis for the PS1 for a weekend from the Irish version of Blockbuster, which, as we all know, is Blockbuster.
I'm not gonna sign off on that one, man. That's all Dennis.
Should have practiced that accent a little more. Had a great weekend playing this game with my mates and having some beers. Went to drop it back on the Monday and the Blockbuster had burned down. Still have the game, never had a chance to give it back.
Wow.
And he has a picture of the game.
Yes,
that is very good. I like that. It says rental only, not for resale.
Also, I choose to believe that with a game like Smash Court Tennis, that this was like the NFL Blitz of tennis.
I mean, it could have been.
That'd
I don't
be
know.
Amazing.
Huh. They did have Outlaw Tennis, but that was that was in the PS2. That was part of the, it was Outlaw Golf, Outlaw Tennis, now Outlaw Golf 2.
Yeah, the thing they don't tell you about Outlaw Golf is it turns out it's just all white collar crime.
I mean, that's just golf is the thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
You gotta time that insider trading meter.
Oh man. Let's see here. Brian says, before any of us owned a GameCube, me and three friends rented one along with Smash Brothers Melee from the local shop. We didn't have a memory card, of course, but you could believe we left that bad boy running for 72 hours so everyone could play as Mewtwo. And then they continue, for the real video rental shop heads out there, the name of the store was Dave's Video, and you know Dave was a 90-year-old man running the whole operation himself. I mean, obviously.
Hell sounds, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Man, the memory card thing, that was a, it was either you got a game and it was cartridge and all of the save slots were taken, so you had to decide whose day am I potentially going to ruin in the future by overwriting their save.
Oh no. Mm-hmm.
Or you had to use your own memory card or end up in a situation like this where you couldn't save. Yeah. Wild. Brutal. David, what does Peter say?
Peter says, when I was in high school, I rented Rogue Galaxy the summer of my junior year. I had a lot of fun playing it the 1 week, 5 days really, that I was playing the game. I then was super excited the following summer after graduating and getting a summer job to find that my Blockbuster was now selling their copies of Rogue Galaxy. I don't know if I ever bought the copy I first read, but in some ways it feels like I did.
Nice. Yeah, I think that ended up happening. I think the SNES copy, Final Fantasy 2/4, that I ended up getting was the copy that I rented enough for the SNES to probably have bought it many times over. Yeah, nice. when they were selling it to make room for other stuff. Nice. So
which game was that?
Final Fantasy 2 at the time. Final Fantasy 4 now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And then round us out, Dennis, what does Jacob say?
Jacob says, pretty sure I screwed up a rental copy of Ocarina of Time when I was 9 or 10 by flying too close to the sun using my Game Shark on it.
Uh-oh.
I used it to bypass the first 3 temples, and when I used the hacked gems to unlock the Temple of Time early, they all glitched out and fused together when they were placed in the temple. I don't think it locked me out or anything, but I was honestly too disturbed by seeing that to keep playing that copy. I'd like to imagine that some other kid rented it down the line and thought the gems were supposed to do that.
You gave Zelda a demon. You literally performed a ritual with a djinn, and it possessed the cart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a grizzled police detective, days away from retirement, working your cold case, and it's finally the demon Zelda killer out there.
Yeah.
How is Zelda, just Zelda games in general, but particularly Ocarina of Time, so freaking breakable in interesting ways?
I mean, like I think specifically with Ocarina of Time, because they were developing, it was developed on the Super Mario 64 engine and they had to do crazy things to get it to run. It might also have to do with the fact that it was initially planned at least at a certain point it was planned for the N64 disk drive. I think, I don't know. There's just something with the memory, but Ocarina of Time in particular is especially breakable for that reason reasons so related to that.
But I'm sure it does this plenty, but the stuff you hear about, it doesn't just hard reboot or go to a black screen. Like it just gets wild.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
stable
that's
in some ways, I guess.
Most people don't know this, but Majora's Mask is actually just a glitched version of Ocarina of Time. Program it; it just ended up that way.
Oh yeah, Majora's Mask just happened. Yeah. For my answer, because it was such a mainstay. I mean, I've got memories of, you know, when we would go and stay the night at my grandparents, like we would go and, you know, it was always a game rental, you know, and, you know, either Chris could pick or I could pick. So like this history goes back a lot for me. And it's hard to say. I would say, probably renting Silent Hill very shortly after it came out. And I wasn't like incredibly young. I was like 12. But at that point, I had played Resident Evil 2, And I figured, oh, I can handle scary things. And this was before I recognized that things can be scary in different ways.
Oh, no.
And I got, here I am, you know, 12, you know, yeah, no, either 11 going on 12 or something like that. You get the idea, tween. And like you get through the entrance where you wake up in the car, or the opening when you wake up in the car and you walk down that long, twisted, fucked up alleyway as the world transitions. And then you see the crucified body and the demon babies walk up and stab you. And there's no way to escape. That was too much for me. And we had a good enough relationship with the Kmart lady that we could take it back and say, hey, this was too much. Can we swap it out for something else? And they let us. I don't know what we got instead, because Silent Hill has left much more of a mark on my life than whatever I got instead. But I did not revisit the original Silent Hill until I think a couple years later when Silent Hill 2 came out, and I played and enjoyed that.
Yeah, man. That's the, you know, trying to judge if this game is appropriate or your thing just by what's on the box is a lost art.
Mm-hmm. All I knew was scary game, and I liked the other scary game, but yeah. David, how about you?
So I think the most like memorable situation was renting Snowboard Kids for the N64, I think, which was not a particularly good game. It was basically just if you took a snowboard game and made it Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing about it is, you know, it's a game that used the save card, but for some reason, despite being a super basic game, it required like an entire save card.
Oh no, I hated those. The dicks.
Yeah, so I just, you know, left the game running all 3 days or whatever. But probably more relevant in terms of like games actually had impact, I really loved Ogre Battle 64.
Oh yeah.
And what I always mess up the name, the Mega Man
Legends
action RPG. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mega Man Legends is really good. I never played the N64 version, but I greatly enjoy Mega Man Legends. I really wish that
would get like a sequel or whatever, or, you know, another sequel. You know what I mean?
There was a plan. There was a plan to do Mega Man Legends 3, but it was canceled. It was originally going to be for the 3DS. That would just be very famously just dropped.
Tax write off.
Yep. Funny how that just ends up. I hate it. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, for me, I use the image of like Gamefly's marketing for this, and for me, that was really the rental system that I interacted with. So you know, Netflix for games. But I played the God of War games that way.
Mm.
And that was one of those things, you know, this was when I was in college, I finally had, a little bit of money to spend on my own. It's like, yeah, I could never swing this, at home, you know, right. In high school, there's no way. And so that was like my moment of liberation. Like, not only can I get God of War, but I can get all three of them, at the time, and play through them all and see what this is all about. Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, Gamefly was a really good value proposition for a college student.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What were we going to say, David?
Well, from what I remember, so, you know, we were roommates in college, and from what I recall from God of War, it's just even as, you know, white male college students, which is basically the peak of, like, your edgelordness, We definitely realized that like pre-dad God of War was kind of dopey.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big thing I remember, I think it was from 3, is like, you know, he's fighting his way through this area and then just stumbles into a harem where all of these naked ladies start trying to fuck him. But the thing that tips him off that this is not real
Yeah, okay.
It's like a necklace or one of their eyes, like it's something gleaming green. It's a necklace or their eyes are green or something like that. And it's like, sometimes I just, wander into an orgy and it happens. But, oh, green necklace. Hey, that's out of place.
This can't be.
Yeah. So that was, just laughing at how absurd it was.
I remember the thing for me was, after he is just straight up, murdered, thousands of people, completely unprovoked, him getting super butthurt about Pandora and being like, I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah.
That whole thing. It's like, no, you're an awful person. There is no redeeming you.
Put this on the nice guys subreddit.
It was a mistake for them to make the 17 plus rating called mature. I realize that's a trait point, but it is, you run into those situations where like, no, that is false advertising. Is what it is. Oh gosh. Good question. Good little trip down memory lane. Thank you for posting it, Dennis. And thank you, folks who responded, for responding. If you would like to be like them, you can go to Facebook, join the Duck Feed community group, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Have either of you seen any details about the Xbox leak?
There was one.
Yeah. So the story of this is, it was initially thought that the FTC leaked this, presumably by accident. It doesn't seem like something a government... my conception of a government agency is not that they would do this capriciously or intentionally. Your mileage is going to vary on that. But what it actually turned out was somebody from Microsoft, what it looks like is somebody from Microsoft's legal team mailed something with a PDF attached that they really shouldn't have attached. It got to the press. These things related to the Microsoft and Activision FTC suit, revealing a ton of things that are on, basically that were on Microsoft's plate, things that they figured would influence the acquisition, right? The overall price, the value, blah, blah, blah. This includes subsidiary companies as well. And there were some things that were that are a little bit more concrete, things that have been more fleshed out. The idea that there is going to be a new Xbox Series X that is entirely digital, which is fine because it is just a Game Pass machine anyway. Down to things that seem a little bit more likely, like a product pipeline specifically around Bethesda. Like there is something called Doom Year Zero that is on the slate. This is a little bit outdated, so that's saying it already should have been out, but stuff gets delayed. Also on here is a Fallout 3 remaster, Dishonored 3, which is exciting, a sequel to Tokyo Ghostwire, stuff like that. Basically saying like, yeah, this stuff does exist. Down to emails with flights of fancy from what's his name, the head of Microsoft, Phil something or other, just talking about not just what companies they want to possibly acquire, such as Nintendo.
I mean, that would be great.
Or even like less likely seeming Valve, but like talking about the particular people that they know who could buy enough stock to tank things in order to lower the stock value so they could make the acquisition, basically force them into an acquisition.
Okay, that's bad.
Yeah. So I don't
know. We just went from amusing to criminal.
Yeah. I don't know if, I don't know if that's if there is pending investigation on that one. But yeah, the idea of Microsoft buying Nintendo, especially ridiculous, them saying Nintendo games are going to leave their hardware anyway. Like their model is the past, when Microsoft has literally sold 25 console units between the Xbox the Xbox One and the Series stuff. So yeah, just a whole bunch of stuff came out, and the official response from Phil, what's his name, the Xbox head, is like, Phil Spencer, there we go, basically saying like, hey, this is really out of date, it's disappointing that stuff got leaked, blah blah blah, legally covering your ass kind of stuff. We're looking forward to announcing a lot of this stuff. We're looking forward to announcing a lot of this stuff officially in the coming days, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that's the basic rundown of what's going on. My response is that Dishonored 3 and a new Doom game sound really good. I'm not over the moon about Fallout 3, but a remake of it seems like it'd be fine. What's y'all's takeaway from this?
Check, I mean, still not buying an CCs. Xbox.
Let's do Dennis first. Check your CCs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And David, what was it you said?
Still not buying an Xbox.
Yeah, it seems a little bit a little bit too late. Yeah, horses out the barn.
I still think it's really weird that they just don't straight up have the next Xbox be like a prepackaged PC.
I mean, it would make a little bit of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just call it an Xbox, but it's like this year's, you know, Xbox, you know, ship year or whatever it is.
Right.
And, you know, the Xbox 2024, and it is just a reliable PC built with maybe a front end on it for Windows, like a big picture mode.
But if it's called a PC, moms will be afraid to buy it for their kids.
Yeah, probably.
They don't have to call it a PC.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so that's a too big of a story not to respond to my mind. There might be more details as it comes out, or there might be more details as the time this episode comes out.
The Fallout 3 remaster is interesting to me because I wonder how that's going to play with Starfield in terms of will Starfield like wet people's appetites in the case of David, or drive them away from new Fallout or new Bethesda games in my case to Fallout 3, or will it have the people that, you know, were disenfranchised with Starfield just like, I'm done, I'm not even interested in Fallout 3?
I couldn't begin to guess. I think that people who were turned off from Starfield might still be attracted to a Fallout or an Oblivion remaster, just because that is also on the slate. I forgot to mention that, because those are comforting, and they kind of know that the bones are there and that at least it is writing they're familiar with. So I don't
know. Just need to freaking give all their franchises to Obsidian.
I mean, I wouldn't argue. Yeah. Let's see. Hey, Dennis, what's happening in the world of Switch ports?
Yeah, so we talked earlier about all this drama around Xbox and wanting to make sure that Baldur's Gate 3 could run well versus, like, you know, not releasing it at all, etc. And Switch just has a very different approach. So Mortal Kombat 1 has just come out, and you know, people are raving about it, etc. But those playing on the Switch are not so happy. The graphical downgrade on the Switch is comical, to say the least. And, you know, we know the Switch is a less powerful platform, so, you know, stuff isn't going to be as reflective and fancy. But that doesn't excuse things like every character's eyes being bugged out all the time.
Like literally no facial expression animation.
It's the what's his face from Friends.
Yeah, Jimmy, that's Joey. That's the meme that I saw, the Joey two-part reaction gif where he's like smiling and then he's, you know, freaked out, eyes bugged. Yeah.
Everyone looks that way.
Mm-hmm.
in Mortal Kombat 1. Objects in the background will just kind of drop in and out of existence depending on how the Switch is feeling at that moment. But, you know, those are the kind of sacrifices you're going to have to make if you want a game that runs smoothly.
See,
hold on. What's that? I'm sorry. I've just gotten in that the game also still runs like shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't necessarily, if it is just a way to get my Mortal Kombat, like, fighting system fix on the go, And I, you know, like if it's a secondary, you know, if the story or whatever is secondary, like if you are a reasonable human being and find the story and world of Mortal Kombat to be farcical, it does not matter to me if it is more farcical because of the technical presentation. The fact that the gameplay doesn't hold up on this version, that is the unforgivable thing.
See, I feel like no one buys Mortal Kombat for the gameplay. Like what they should really do is just send you a DVD of all of the fatalities and you just watch that and then you're done.
We call that the YouTube port.
Yep.
Yeah, like I don't know. I feel like Mortal Kombat would be much more effective if they just did what they apparently want to do and just made kung fu movies.
Yeah. They've done that a couple times. It has not been very good.
Yeah, the most recent one was okay.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, the web series was amazing.
No, I never saw it. I don't know.
That's because it was made by people that actually care about the franchise.
True. But I think that web series, or at least the trailer for it, or like the little mini episode, was eventually what turned into the recent Warner Brothers one, the 2020.
I think that might be right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember something about that.
Yeah.
There was one that came out like Legend of Chun-Li when we were in college, right?
That was Street Fighter.
Oh, that was Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Street Fighter's gotten a lot of great spin-off media. The anime and manga are good. The pen and paper games apparently pretty awesome.
Huh.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. And bad for whoever did the port job on this. You don't like, you don't want your games becoming a meme for the wrong reason. And, woof.
No.
This is going to be a hard cloud to get out from under.
You had to see, like, not only do they have to do a poor job porting it, but then several waves of people need to sign off on the bullshit port to get it out into people's hands.
You have to very mistakenly believe that people are not going to notice or care.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I have a very biased understanding of the Switch. Like, I feel like isn't that kind of par for the course for Switch?
Our primary target market is people who buy it by accident because they don't understand the Switch store.
There have been surprisingly good Switch ports. Like, the Switch port of Doom and Doom Eternal are both very good, to my understanding. Like, people have been surprised by the by the quality. And studios that know what they're doing have been able to put out diminished but still very functional ports. This is just, I don't know. I think that we have reached the point where the Switch hardware is too outdated, and the game that they are adapting, it assumes too much about modern hardware that it just you can't make both ends of that belt meet.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe Nintendo should just make a modern system.
It'd be cool if they did. I would not turn it down. Let's see, David, what story you got?
Okay, so this one's kind of a weird one. It's really just a discussion on a forum that I found really interesting. One of the programmer forums I follow, someone asked, what's the purpose of the press any key screen at the start of video games?
Well, it's to check and see if your controller or your keyboard has an any key.
Exactly. So there's, you know, again, this is just people in a forum, so, you know, nothing necessarily, I don't know, authoritative, but some interesting ideas. Seems like the most common suggestion is it basically lets the game know which of the various devices hooked to your computer or whatever you intend to use.
Hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
The other thing people point out is that it makes it so games that have long load time, you don't have to sit there waiting for it to load because the game will, you know, immediately jump into gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if a game connects to the internet, it generally doesn't connect till you press that button, which saves the company bandwidth.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so I think that's a lot of people pointing out that this is probably partially a holdover from the attract mode from arcade games. I just found that interesting, you know, kind of an interesting discussion and something I've never noticed. Interesting fact, the whole Microsoft press control alt delete to log in, the original reason for that was to prevent a attack where someone creates a computer program that makes a fake login thing that you would type your password into and then steal it, because if you press control alt delete, it'll, you know, preempt whatever program happens to be running.
Oh okay, huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I'd heard, and I thought I'd seen video footage of it. It was Bill Gates and like one of the chief engineers talking about how they had so much trouble, you know, building Windows, and there were so many glitches that control delete was like a backdoor for the developers that they absolutely loved to get out of jail free.
Mm. Oh, I can definitely see that.
You see Bill Gates in that video, and if you've never seen someone murder their coworker with their eyes, that's what Bill Gates is doing.
Yeah, I like this. I like these what boils down to little UX customs more than anything, because like all of these or any of these or many of these at a time could be a good reason to do it, but also like this is just what people expect and there is no appreciable reason to break from it, you know, would be another thing.
One other kind of funny one, apparently at some point in one of the console cycles, one of the console manufacturers mandated a maximum load time to first interaction, so it was basically a way to cheat and like load what's technically the first interaction really, really quickly.
Oh, that's dirty. Yeah,
that's thinking like a programmer.
Yeah,
Goddard's law.
Cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
This button.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 473. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to help us out, you can leave a rating or a review. You can support the network on Patreon. You can tell your friends. You can subscribe. You can participate in the multiplayer by going to the Duckfeed community page. It's all there. Those are all things that you can do and that we appreciate. Dennis, you got anything for us?
Oh, what do I have? You can find me on Blue Sky now. I am at Furia Games, F-U-R-I-A Games.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Let me see here. I think that's going to be everything. So I've been Cole Ross. You can catch my streams on Friday and Saturday nights at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I've been Dennis Furia. I shot the cannon indoors and already told you where you can find me.
I'm David Mysmith.
And stick around for some titles. These cats are just going wild. I don't know what got into them.
Cats going wild.
Yeah. I have two. I have Give It to Me and Pigs and Bunnies. And I have You Gave Zelda a Demon.
Not bad.
Dennis, what you got? Or David, what you got?
I got nothing.
Okay.
I have two as well. I have The Tippy Top of a Death Spiral. And then I've got The Insider Trading Meter.
Okay. I like the tippy top of a death spiral.
Yeah, I'll go with
topical
that.
Always. All right, then it is decided.